What's up, everybody? I'm JJ John Jastrzemski.
And I'm Jason Goff. And if you haven't heard, The Ringer has gone local.
I'm bringing the fire. I'm bringing the rain from the Big Apple with my show, New York, New York.
And I'm repping Chi-Town with my new show, The Full Goal, on all things Chicago.
We've got episodes 3 nights a week with all the reaction to the local teams and guests.
Plus bonus episodes around all the big games and storylines.
So whether you're uptown, downtown, in the burbs, or a transplant,
make sure you follow New York, New York, and The Full Goal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Yes.
It's the Ringer NBA show presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you could check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel. Official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's. People come up with all kinds of excuses not to try Arby's. Things like, nobody eats there, Bill. Isn't it just roast beef, Bill? Come on, Bill, only grandmas like it. Well, excuses end with Arby's Free Sandwich Month. Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Now trying Arby's doesn't sound so crazy, does it? Join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today.
Hello and welcome to the Ringer NBA show. It's The Answer. I'm Chris Ryan. I'm joined by Sirit Sohi. What's up, Sirit?
Chris, how's it going?
It's going great. Well, okay, it is going great, but what we're going to do today, we're breaking negative. We're breaking bad today. So Sirit and I wanted to just have a quick venting session. This is like we get into the end of the first half of the season, and what we wanted to ask each other this week on The Answer is, what's frustrating you? What's bothering you? What's annoying you about the NBA this season? So we can get it all out. We can clean the baffles, as they say on submarines, and then we can go into the second half of the season renewed with like a new sense of like optimism and idealism about this beautiful game that we follow. Does that sound good to you, sir?
I'm with it. You know, Aquarius season just started. I think this is a perfect time for something like this. A month's about to end. It's perfect. I'm really excited. But before we get into that, though, I was watching Lakers Sixers last night.
My
mind started wandering, and I started thinking, I have my own answer to this question now after a while. If you had a team of 5 Matisse Thybulles versus 5 Malik Monks, who would win?
I think the game would end 6-0 after 48 minutes, and I think the Monks would win. Can I tell you something, though?
Of course.
If I was a mad scientist and I could build the perfect NBA player, I would just put Matisse Thybulle and Malik Monk together. Can you imagine if Matisse Thybulle could score like Malik Monk is capable of scoring?
I think that's actually what kind of spawned this thought, because Matisse Thybulle is the perfect basketball player in terms of just like, you know, he just like star jumps and then just gets at every loose ball. He's just so athletic. But yeah, that jumper, I still think he should get more minutes. I think if I had a generational defender, I would just live with the fact that, you know, he's not going to hit his jumper all the time, see if he can get into rhythm. Anyway, we can talk
all the time. Is that what you think his field goal percentage suggests, is that he doesn't hit his jumper all the time? I'm not asking for Dale Ellis. I'm asking for like hitting the backboard from the corner every once in a while.
Okay, maybe not for basketball reasons, but just I just like watching him do stuff.
Yes, you know? Yeah, I think in like a vacuum, like, or in like little bursts, Matisse is like one of the most magnetic players to watch, because like you just feel him create basketball actions that like a lot of teams don't create, where there's just like a loose ball going towards your rim or whatever, like, or going towards the opposing team's rim. So it creates like these fun fast break situations. And also like when he pressures the ball, like you can tell it actually genuinely irritates the ball handler. You know, like I've seen there's so many like kind of like fake full court presses or fake pressures But he's actually like a menace.
Yeah, it adds a nice element of surprise. Like NBA actions can start to get very predictable. So when somebody can intercept a pass that like you just never see get intercepted, it's just like, oh, like kind of jolts you awake a little bit.
Right, unless Russ throws it and then you see it get intercepted quite a lot.
Malik Monk could probably intercept those.
Right. I just really quickly about that Sixers-Lakers game, I felt like that had like a real exhibition game vibe because it was like, it was a very much like get Anthony Davis back in the mix. And he had like an absolute Shaqian game for most of it and looked like he was specifically trying to assert dominance over Embiid. Like it did seem like, and he was giving Embiid a lot of trouble, but the Sixers won pretty comfortably and never seemed particularly bothered.
Yeah, it was a really fun game. I love watching that matchup down low. I didn't love watching them both fall a lot. That was incredibly stressful having both those guys. We don't get a lot of Davis versus Embiid, actually. Like both of those guys have dealt with a lot of injuries, and yeah,
twice a year. Yeah, like that would be it.
Exactly.
And then it's like, even if they are, the teams play twice a year, but it's how often are Davis and Embiid both playing at the same time? So yeah, I thought it was a fun suite of games last night. We had the Sixers and the Lakers, and then we had the Timberwolves Warriors game. But it does bring me to my first vent, if you want me to start kick things off here. I think mine are going to be pretty general. I'm a pretty general guy. I like to throw out populist ideas.
You're more like, I would say you're more of a visionary, right? Like a big picture thinker.
Sure. I just think we really need to like change the NBA television product. I was thinking about this specifically because, and you know, I'm drunk on NFL playoff football, especially this last weekend of games that we had. And, you know, like 52 million people watch Chiefs Bills. I'm not asking for that to be like an NBA game in late January. But I really do think we are way past the point of when the NBA could offer a feasible red zone-esque product that would make watching basketball on a night-to-night basis a little bit more engaging. And I think what happens is like you get settled in on one game, and that game has its ebbs and flows just like any sport does. But because it's like you're changing the channel and you're trying to find like the rhythm of some other game, especially if you're watching on like a Wednesday and you have like the full suite of games, it just gets like kind of like a little cumbersome. You're kind of like checking scores. You're trying to find something. So here's my proposition. Like start NBA crunch time, NBA fast break, NBA full court, whatever you want to call this thing. I understand there might be some issues with like it being live. Like the whole premise of Red Zone is that there are parts of the NFL field that when a team is like within 20 yards, it's just the red zone. But like when it gets like, when there's some momentum going on a drive, like they can identify like this team is approaching a score. But to me, NBA red zone would be really easily governed by like, okay, the starters are on the floor, you know, so we can just have all stars on TV all the time. And when games get close. So for the first couple of hours of the East Coast games, you just show like whenever like the NBA all-stars are on populating the court, or if there is a particularly close click game. And then as those games get down to crunch time, when it's a 21 point lead and nobody is watching it, like that game gets kicked off, but there's usually a game or two that's within 10. And I just think that would just make the night to night NBA watching a little bit more holistic. I mean, I think I don't really understand why they don't do this. I would even allow for them to black out the national games that are on that at that point from the product. So you have to choose either you're going to watch Red Zone or you're going to watch the national games. I assume that what like Turner and ESPN would not be happy with that, with any competition like that, but there's already League Pass. But I just think like there is a feeling for me of like the NBA lagging behind a little bit in like how it services its fans in a way that's surprising, because I think we think of the league as like a cutting edge product.
I feel like it would be really simple. You could literally just call it League Pass Alert.
Yes.
And you could just have like, you know, just have like an actual NBA junkie running it. Like we don't have to think that hard about it. Just like, you know, like I have a craving for this as well. And maybe you're the same way, because what I do is I turn on a game and then I forget that anything else exists.
Yes.
Even if
yeah.
that game gets boring, and I'm like, oh, this game's boring. And I'm like,
sometimes I forget that game exists. That's the problem with NBA Twitter, is like, I'm like, oh, yeah. But it sounds like something really important is happening in this Pacers mm-hmm. game, but I guess I'm just like pot committed to watching Luka tonight.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's a lot of FOMO. I would like my FOMO eradicated from my NBA watching experience. Maybe what you could do is, you know, even if you have that compete with ESPN or TNT, where they may not want those games on TV, whereas League Pass, they could look at it as like just not really competing against them, which I think is actually a fair assessment by them too, right? But you could do, it's not like ESPN and TNT have national games on every single night, right?
No, they're out here ducking Thursday night football anyway. It's just like, let's like during most of the first half of the season, at least.
It's these six game, like every game is local type of nights. Cause those also end up sometimes being the most fun nights. Just kind of like, I kind of imagine myself going down a staircase in a way where I'm like, oh, okay, so now we've reached the fourth quarter of this game, which means that the other one's in its third quarter and change, and we can kind of just hop and try to catch the fourth quarter of every single one. So if somebody could curate that experience for me, I would be thrilled.
I'm sure there are Twitter feeds out there who like alert you when so and so has checked back into a game. Like there are some like pretty elaborate NBA League Pass alert things.
Well, hypothetically, Twitter is supposed to do that.
Yeah, I mean, but I just think it would be cool if there was some, like, it was a little bit more automated, and if it was curated, like if they had the Scott Hansen-esque figure who was just like, yeah, we're going over to Charlotte because LaMelo is going nuts. And it's like, I don't even mind if there's a little bit of a delay. I understand with basketball it's a little harder because there are so many more breaks, or it just feels like there are more breaks. But I wouldn't even mind if it was like, there's a 5-minute delay on live action because we're like getting ahead of it. I would probably choose that over, oh, you're 30 seconds behind, like you have to go flip over to this now.
Yeah. You know who I would tap for that? No, it's just two options. You could go like the super serious basketball route of it, and you can't get him because he works for ESPN and he does a million other things, but Tim Legler could be like, if you wanted to go like the X's and O's side of it, right?
Okay.
And the other way, if you want to just go pure entertainment, like guy just coming up with the most awesome catchphrases on the spot ever, Stacey King. Like, let's get Stacey King national.
Should we have Gus Johnson and Stacey King be like the god view of the NBA every night?
I would love that. Or who's a Hornets announcer again? Michael Penis. I did like a story about him last year. He was just how excited he was about LaMelo. I think he'd be fun too.
What's your first thing you want to vent about?
I have to admit, getting into this, I've really been enjoying NBA basketball this week. It's been a fun week of basketball, so I'm gonna have to manufacture some anger, but maybe by like 5 minutes in we'll get to the real thing. I'm gonna start with something that actually makes me angry, though.
I think venting is different than anger, right? Like, we could just be, like, mildly frustrated about something.
Yeah, but why not process some emotions in a healthy way with a friend, you know? I'm gonna start with something that actually makes me mad, and it isn't NBA related. So when you're in like the NBA YouTube wormhole, you also kind of end up adjacent to, like, I guess, the basketball self-help world in the same way that it's just, you know, wanting to like you know, make your bed can kind of then turn you into a right-wing extremist is kind of the same thing. The amount of plyometrics videos that have been popping up on my front page have just been ridiculous, and it's taking me back to a time when I was in the 11th grade, 5'6", not very athletic, trying to improve my vertical, thinking that maybe one day I'd be able to dunk.
What are plyometrics?
So basically, they're just a bunch of techniques that are supposed to help you jump higher and just be more athletic, and the kind of athleticism like that you would want for basketball, like box jumps and stuff.
So is this, because when I was at basketball camp a long time ago, we had strength shoes that had like basically like it was like platform shoes, but towards the balls of your feet, so that you basically were always running around like on your tiptoes, and that those, like when you took them off and put on regular sneakers, that was supposed to have improved your vertical.
Oh, damn.
We had like a demo for this at St. Joe's basketball camp, but it was just like strength shoes, you'll dunk. And I'm like, I'm 5'4". You know, you're like, I'm a 12-year-old. I'm not dunking, but thank you.
See, I got hustled by my own self-belief and sprained my ankle multiple times. Kids, don't believe in the videos. People who make the videos, you know, like just stop. Doesn't work.
Okay.
Yeah. Just stop. It just made me sad.
A little content regulation. I get it. That's
good. Yeah. And throw in some, you know, throw in some stretches in the front and the back, you know, like, these kids aren't going to stretch if you don't tell them to.
Okay. That's your YouTube algorithm that you're mad about. What's an NBA thing that you're a little bit frustrated about?
Trade deadline coming up. So I got like two sides of like kind of like this, a similar coin here. Robert Covington slander on one end, and maybe it's a little too strong to call it slander, but he is on the trade block-ish. It seems like it's, you know, I don't know. But I feel like every time now Covington becomes a conversation, the conversation becomes about all the defensive things that he can't do.
Oh, right. The myth of Robert Covington's sublime defense.
Yeah. And it's just because, well, it's an evaluation problem. So, like, we hear good defender and we just assume that they're good at everything. And that's not how it works. It's like if somebody said good scorer, would you just be like, oh, well, that means that they can score from everywhere on the court. Covington's a great help defender. He's not one of the best isolation defenders in the league, but he's on a team. And this happens to this used to happen to PJ Tucker, but he's on a team where you think that if you just sign like one or two good defenders, that's going to be enough, and then you put all the defensive pressure on them to somehow like make you into a good defensive team. And it's like it's one perimeter defender,
right?
In the NBA, it's not going to do anything, you know. Like even Iguodala used to go through, like, every single defender on the perimeter. Like, you know, you have some guys that are legitimate game changers, but aside from that, like, most guys are going to look pretty porous if you like make them do literally everything. And it's a long season. If they have to take on every single matchup, it's just not gonna, like, you know. Anyway, that's something that's been annoying me. And the other end of it is the Tobias Harris slander that we've been seeing.
Okay, so Sixers adjacent player slander.
Yeah, because that's the offensive end of this. He wasn't asked to do this. Everything that you're directing towards him, like, there's a guy who's not playing. I get it. Philly fans are, they've been plenty mad at Ben Simmons. But man, like, Tobias Harris is just like, he's just been the player he's always been. And he was never supposed to be like your closer. He wasn't signed to be that. That's why even signing all these other guys, whether it's Jimmy Butler or now you're going to try to get like an actual closer for Simmons. Like, you know this. There's this thing that happens where rosters get overstretched and then players can't live up to, you know, whatever it is that they have to make up. And then we get mad at the players instead of, you know, either luck or roster construction.
Yeah, I mean, he's an unfashionable offensive player right now. I think that's part of the reason why people are kind of turning on him a bit. There's also, like, he's pretty deliberative. Like, when he gets the ball, like, there's going to be some dribbling or some, like, pumping before an action happens. And I think that isn't really what, I mean, like, unless it's like, oh, you're in your bag. Tobias doesn't have a really like a bag per se. Like, he can get to the rim and he can get hot with his jumper, but it's not like watching Anthony Edwards like look off three different Timberwolves and then like,
yeah, he has a bag when you get him off a screen.
Yeah, but and then he can beat a triple team. It's like, that's cool. And he's young and he's like, it's all promise. Like, this is what Tobias is. And he gets paid like a closer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can go back ages and start debating like whether or not NBA players should have their salaries held against their games or not. But the truth of the matter is that Tobias is paid like an all-star, and he doesn't really play like one. And now, you know, like, I think that there's been, this is like the sort of like the downside of having an NBA front officer, specifically Daryl Morey, where you kind of expect him to constantly be like maximizing the roster. And that a player like Tobias is like, oh, you know, Daryl wants to get that off the books. You know, Daryl wants to get him out of there. You know, Daryl would like love to attach him to like a Kings deal so that like he can just get off of Tobias's money. And like, so that probably is starting to get to him. Like, I mean, like, he obviously had like a moment a couple of weeks ago where he was giving a little bit back to Sixers fans who were booing him. There was a report that he's playing with a couple of different like upper body injuries right now, and it's like, just so you know, like, Tobias is like gutting it out. It's tough. Like, he seems like an absolutely like awesome dude, which is like part of like the bummer here. But yeah, like, the Tobias slander is pretty tough, although personally, aesthetically, I have a tough time watching him.
Yeah, that was a very diplomatic defense of the slander. I can accept some of that, most of that.
Okay, so my next thing I want to vent about is, I think that this is probably like something that maybe people are noticing this week, because last night, obviously, was the great Andrew Wiggins debate online. Like, Andrew Wiggins was elected as an all-star starter. Wait, remind me, like, the all-star starters are votes, right? That's fan vote.
The media gets a vote, but I assume this was fan vote.
There was also, like, there was some player voting, because there was, like, players voted for Kyrie and Grayson Allen and Ben Simmons. Like, they all received votes in various ways for starters. But, you know, like, obviously there was, and the Andrew Wiggins thing got me thinking a little bit about like how players are rewarded. Now, All-Star is one thing. You know, there's contractual benefits attached to All-Star, and it means a lot to the players. Obviously, meant a lot to Andrew Wiggins. All-Star like is a really good historical, like go back and see how many All-Star teams a person made. But I do think that the NBA sometimes has absolutely like meaningless awards that they give out. And I would just like to say, I don't think we need a player of the week. I don't know what like purpose this serves, but like whenever I'm watching TV and they're just like, oh, and this week's player of the week in the Eastern Conference. And I'm like, this information literally went in one ear, went out the other. I don't have an example because I've never remembered someone who won player of the week. I assume Jokic has won it a bunch of times this season, but like, does Jokic know that he won player of the week? Does Jokic get like a contractual bonus if he wins player of the week? Are we really rewarding giving an award for having three good games in 7 days? I don't understand that. I mean, player of the month, I also don't really care about either, but I guess at least it's like a larger sample size of work. And can I have like just a second here to talk about like the NBA is the only league that rewards substitutes? Like, the sixth man? Do we need to give an award for the sixth man? Can we just like put Lou Williams in the Hall of Fame? Like, let's just like say he goes to Springfield and then retire the award. I think it's cool. I'm sure that there are contractual bonuses attached to winning sixth man awards. Like, I'm sure that gets written into certain people's contracts. But like, it does seem like an award you can game. Like, if you have, like, if you average 17 a game off the bench, like, you can just win the sixth man award. Do you think that it's a valuable award to have?
I love the sixth man award, honestly, because I think that you need something to reward those guys for actually coming off the bench in some cases. Now, like, for the last little while, we've kind of had six men who are actually just supposed to be coming off the bench, and they're doing a great job at that role, right? But when you have, like, you know, the six man in the traditional mold of, like, a Manu Ginobili or, you know, like, a Andre Iguodala with the Warriors, that's the six man that I like to... I think that role is, first of all, just, like, it's one of my favorite roles in basketball.
The straight bucket off the bench guy?
I love it. I love it. And just, like, getting everybody set up, whether it's, like, you know, it's like a bench full of young players or just guys who are maybe a little bit offensively challenged. I think it's a noble undertaking, and I think it deserves to be rewarded.
Siri, here are the last batch of six men since 2012. When James Harden won it for the Thunder. J.R. Smith, Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, okay. Jamal Crawford, Eric Gordon, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Jordan Clarkson.
Okay, so not exactly like pillars of selflessness, I guess.
I don't mean, like the selflessness is irrelevant to me. I just feel like, why don't we call it the Jamal Crawford Award and give it to the best scoring sixth man?
That's fair. I never like how the voting turns out for that. Like, Jordan Clarkson was almost on my list. Just Jordan Clarkson. And not this year, but, like, you know, in those, like, last year, it's like, we're gonna, like, why not Joe Ingles? You know? Why not Joe
also,
Ingles? I like that type of six man.
I have to go back and look, but is sixth man best bench player, or is sixth man literally you have to come into the game, you have to be the first sub into the game? Because sometimes I guess you can't tell because you can sub in two guys at once, or sometimes...
I think it's just a matter of how many games that you actually do come off the bench. I don't think it matters like when it happens. You gave me an idea for how to fix the Player of the Week awards.
Okay.
Because the only time it's ever fun is when someone you don't expect to get it gets it.
Right, when it's like Austin Reeves gets it or something. Right.
Yeah, yeah. So I think maybe there should be a rule where you can only get it a certain amount of times in your career, and after that you're done. You're just off the...
You get retired from Player of the Week.
Yeah, and then they have to pluck from like some of the players that are having impressive weeks that we might not know about, because then it could actually be like somewhat... it could be cool. It could be like something for a role player to aspire to, potentially, like an employee of the month sort of thing, you know?
Employee of the month.
I was just saying in my head, I was like, ooh, I don't know. Let me take that back real quick. But I think that could be fun, because right now what we have is just like, it's like this check-in. Like the one you texted me about, I think it was Trae Young getting Player of the Week, where it's like we're just checking in and it's like, yep, Trae Young still good at basketball. You know, like that's all we're really learning from it right now.
I'm looking at it right now. There's one week where like I was like, oh, January 10th, like Ja and Fred VanVleet won. And that would be like a good suggestion to go check out Ja and Fred VanVleet if you were somehow like a casual mm-hmm. who didn't know that either of those guys were doing well.
What if it was just like a what's new this week column? What if the NBA just had somebody write one of those?
The kind of thing that you're talking about, like Miles Bridges won it 1 week this season, you know, like Bojan Bogdanovic won it one mm-hmm. week last season. I'm just like scrolling through like all the players of the week. Not a single thing about this is ringing any bells. Sadiq Bey won it 1 week last season. Did Sadiq Bey like get anything out of that?
I don't know. Probably not.
No. So like, I don't like, I guess I see what you're saying. Like, yeah, that would be cool. Is like once Jokic wins it once in a week, so that by the end of the season, we're giving player of the week to like the 13th dude on the Bulls.
I say let's not even roll it over season by season. Like I say, like let's just like make a rule. Like if you have a max contract, if you are an all NBA player, an all star, you just can't be player of the week.
So here's my flips. We're spending way more time on player of the week than I thought we were going to do. But here's one idea. And I don't know that I bet the Players Association would reject this because, you know, this would require people to like maybe miss time. They would play through injuries or maybe not take the rest that they needed. But what if player of the week was essentially like winning a golf tournament and you get like FedEx Cup points? Like when PGA players win a golf tournament, not only do they win the purse money for the tournament, they lift the trophy or whatever, but then there is like the FedEx Cup, which like racks up points throughout the year. It's the same thing for like F1 does that, I think, with the races people run. And it's essentially like you want to win MVP, you have to get a certain amount of player of the week awards or be like second or third in player of the week that week. So essentially it's either like abandon player of the week or make player of the week the thing that decides MVP at the end of the season.
That might be a more accurate way to decide MVP though, because like what we do is like we just stop watching after February. Like we're like, we just decide and then
right.
It's over.
We talk about it way too early. Yeah. We start talking about it 3 games in and we're like, oh my God, is Brandon Ingram the MVP? And then we lose interest around the Super Bowl because we start like paying attention to football. And then it's like, oh, I just assumed Steph is the MVP. But he's not. Okay, what's your next thing you want to vent about?
I'm gonna do a quick one here. Karl Towns' posture. It's been a long time, man. I just can't believe nobody has fixed the way that he runs. And it's just like it's this very strange thing where with the basketball in his hands, he looks like honestly like one of the most graceful offensive players that you've ever seen, especially at his height. Like he looks incredible. He has a very pretty game. And the second he doesn't have the ball anymore, it's like he's a 7-foot Mr. Burns. And seriously,
I did not expect this to be this much body science from you today.
You're not going to be able to unsee it. Yeah, I don't know. These are the things that stick out to me. But I'm just so shocked that nobody has, like, at this point in his career, gotten that out of his game. Especially for a big man, like, the way that you run and, like, it's like, one of the most important things for your long-term health. And, like, it helps everything else. I also would love for him to like touch the ball more. That would be cool. But like that is secondary to.
I feel like Anthony Edwards is like, I love Ant, but like he does look off like open players on his team. Like, and I'm sure Finch is giving him the green light and like that's what they need from him. But it was kind of fascinating last night to watch them. They were making a little bit of a push against the Warriors like in the fourth quarter, and there were a couple of times where I felt like a little bit more ball movement, a little bit like more like. Like finding the open guy might have helped a little bit.
Yeah, they could use a little bit more table setting because Ant's not necessarily naturally inclined to be that guy. And I think while Russell can do it, he's still more of a hybrid that I would consider more of a scoring guard too. So, yeah, I agree. I also think that maybe the solution to that is literally just like they do run some stuff out of the high post for Cat, but just kind of doing that more, especially in those situations where you just don't really have like offensive balance. It's just kind of obvious. I don't know. He's Karl Towns, and now that you've got everybody else kind of in the mix, it seems like the next natural kind of progression to the offense.
Timberwolves currently in eighth. They're pretty much locked up with the Lakers in that spot, that area of the Western Conference. Do you think that the Timberwolves should be pleased with their season so far?
It's a good question. Yes.
I think so. I think they got a couple of lucky breaks. Not lucky, but they have some breaks in the sense that there's no Zion in New Orleans and there's no really functionally no Dame in Portland. So they've gotten the breaks that they needed to kind of get out of that 10 spot. I think that if you're the T-Wolves, you probably look at your roster and you look at Kat, right, and you're thinking, gosh, we'd love to get above like these this Clippers team without their stars. You know what I mean? Like that would be like, I think that the Timberwolves should be aiming for the Clippers and the Nuggets as like the teams that they want to claw back. You know, I think Finch is a cool coach. I like that team. They're fun to watch. I would love to see them in like not even the play-in games. I'd love to see them in the playoffs this year.
Yeah. Also, I know that we're talking about things we don't like, but just shout out to the amount of defensive creativity we're seeing this year. Like Wolves and the Bulls have kind of built like these perimeter oriented defenses that have made up for, you know, what they're missing in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that like it was something that we even envisioned happening. Like I think the Bulls kind of saw it like they built that team intentionally to be able to do that. But I think the Wolves kind of ran into it with like the ways that they use Russell as a defender. And obviously like Ant is just incredibly aggressive too. And you have Vanderbilt just like fucking everywhere. But using your perimeter stars to actually build a really effective defense when you don't have the right guy in the middle to make the rotations it's really fun to watch because it just means the team's going to run a ton, just going to try to get a bunch of steals. And if they don't, it also means that they're probably just going to have a bad defensive night like they did. So it's fun on the other end too. I'm just going to throw in the one thing that I like this week.
I like your positivity.
At Walt Disney World Resort, magic is found in spontaneity. The unplanned, the unexpected, an inside joke born in the Haunted Mansion queue. A surprise Stitch sighting in Tomorrowland. Watching fireworks from your room. These memories aren't made from predetermined plans, but manifested from simply being present and together in the most magical place. Find your moment at Walt Disney World Resort.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed, use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/RingerMBA. Just go to Indeed.com/RingerMBA right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the team the Sixers beat last night, the Lakers, really quick. I feel like they're a little bit of a drag on the NBA this year. I was thinking about like how Tom Brady might retire. I don't want LeBron to retire, but I do want to retire LeGM. I want to retire this idea that like LeBron as puppet master, LeBron as like team, like roster constructor, and that LeBron is somehow like taking meetings in the middle of the season to like redo this roster that by all accounts like was his choice to put together in the first place. So the like midseason what trades will LeBron make thing has become a little stale. As someone who made a lot of bones and wrote a lot of blogs in praise of Russ, I officially tap out of the Russ wars. This is like, I bend the knee. I can't do it anymore. I can't talk about this anymore. I mean, it was cool, I think, at certain points when he was in, well, for me personally, I enjoyed him as a Wizard more than I enjoyed him as a Rocket or as a Laker. I wonder whether or not if he could go back, if he would have just stayed on the Thunder. I wonder like if it would have just been better for him to spend 5 or 6 years getting eliminated in the first round of the playoffs and be like a franchise legend and making $55 million a year or whatever. And then, I don't know. I mean, I think it's cool that he went out looking for a ring in Houston. Like they obviously wanted to completely tear it down. But we've taken someone who was just like a really, really special electric NBA player and made him like this weird political football for like debates about the game that I think kind of sucks, and then also like is just now like gets blamed for every franchise's problems that he ever steps foot on. So tired of the Russ thing, tired of LeBron like trade watch, like who's LeBron gonna deal, who's he gonna swap, what insane return on like nothing, like what THT is gonna fetch on the open market. The Lakers are just bumming me out, and talking about the Lakers and reading as much about the Lakers as I do is bumming me out.
Would you be bummed out if John Wall Westbrook trade actually happened? He went back to Houston.
Is that going to happen? Like, is that like, I thought like he left Houston like abruptly. Like,
it's not his choice, though. I mean, I imagine it would be like, I think it would be a buyout situation.
Sure, sure. But like for, wait, for Russ?
Mm-hmm.
Does Houston do buyouts? Like, I got the impression, like, I mean, like, why not buy out Wall then?
Well, they would want to trade Wall so they could try to get that Lakers first round pick that was, that they've been, I think, I guess it's been reported that that's what the deal would be. Like,
yeah, I mean, this is the funny thing is, like, Wall is another guy who is just like one of my favorite five NBA players mm-hmm. in the beginning of this, the last decade, and is now become like this sort of weird albatross. And like, I just think mm-hmm. it sucks. Like, he was an absolutely amazing player to watch, and Washington Wall was so good before those injuries. So I don't know. It just is like this. I feel like we get like fixated on the Lakers because of like the franchise and also because of LeBron. But this is the ninth best team in the Western Conference. And it's just like when they do their surge, when they get all their, when LeBron and AD play together and they rattle off like 8 out of 10, I'm sure it'll be back in the championship mix. But like right now, it's just, I wish there was just like a moratorium on talking about him.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it kind of transitions into my next thing that I've been annoyed with all season. It's just like the absurd synchronicity of all of the Lakers and Nets injuries.
Yes. So that it's all like their entire seasons are like theoretical, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like we're still, it is January 28th. We're more than halfway through the season and we are still in that place. We still don't really know what these teams like would look like. They played this week and the Lakers were full strength and they looked really good. And Anthony Davis like looks like he lost some weight. He looks a lot better defensively. He looks more engaged. He's like been really physical. I think he's been kind of like the AD that people were hoping to see. And then the next day it's like LeBron has a knee sprain and we only get Lakers Nets for that particular moment. And then in the Sixers game, hopefully it's not like he played through it. Hopefully it's nothing. But then in the Sixers game, AD hurts his wrist. It's just like, come on, man.
No, his x-rays were negative. AD x-ray watch is another thing that I could never, I'd love to opt out of.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, though, you're right, though. I mean, like, we've got these two teams that I think a fair amount of people were like, yeah, Lakers Nets, like that'll be the finals, right? Like, you know, and I mean, I'm sure there was plenty of people who were like Bucks and stuff like that.
Yeah, just need both plots to move forward though at this point.
Yes. Yeah. Like it just does seem like, you know, and we'll probably this season not get like an optimized Nets team just because Kyrie's only going to be playing these away games, so the rhythm of that team is going to be compromised. I was going to ask you whether or not you wanted to weigh in at all on the Harden stuff this week.
Well, you were talking about it before the pod, so, you know, this is a vent session. Let's go. Let's get it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I have like galaxy brain take is that I think that the original, like the Sixers are waiting for Harden report felt a little bit like a response to Daryl Morey's 97.5 interview that we talked about last week on the show, which was basically like, you know, we 1000% would welcome Ben back. We're a way better team with Ben. He is the perfect fit for Joel. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was a lot of cryptic stuff about like, if this, then that. And like, we're not trading him for 30 cents on the dollar. Everything we talked about last week. And then pretty much right after that, I think in the beginning of this week, there was sort of this renewed, like the Sixers are holding fast for James Harden, who they think they can get, who, you know, James Harden's a free agent in the summer. And it would have to be like a sign and trade essentially. And, you know, quickly that was a shot down by a Woj report that was like, the Nets are not entertaining offers for James Harden and also think that like the James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving thing that they moved heaven and earth to put together, that Kevin Durant and James Harden both were like, make this happen, is not going to be broken up this season or next season. And this is the franchise they want to go forward with. And then it got into a whole, like, if you're James Harden, why would you go to the Sixers? And if you're Brooklyn, why would you let him go to a division rival to the extent that that matters? So I feel like there was like a lot of through the media like manipulation going on between like basically Clutch and the Sixers in this story without knowing anything like behind the scenes. It just felt like the order of operations of that narrative where it was like Daryl's interview, the James Harden trade rumor, the James Harden trade rumor being shot down, and now we're back where we started and we're, you know, 12 days out from the or 13 days out from the trade deadline. I don't think Simmons is getting dealt before February 10th. I think this goes in the summer.
Do you think that there's anything real about a potential Harden to Philly for Simmons scenario past the trade deadline?
You know what? I've learned that never to say never about NBA stuff, but it would be really surprising to me And also, like, I do actually wonder whether or not, like, that's the bet you make. I guess if it's just for Simmons and Simmons doesn't want to play in Philly anyway, go for it. But, you know, Brooklyn gave up a lot to get Harden. And I think that they would probably be, like, pretty hard-pressed to, like, just be like, yeah, sure, go ahead 2 hours south and go play with a generational center that we're going to have to play you guys five times a year or whatever.
Yeah, I don't really see it from the Nets side either, which is I feel like it would have to be, like, happening right now, and I don't think it will because, you know, once the offseason comes, like, what's, you know, how's that even going to work, right? So actually, I was reading Rob Mahoney's profile of Seth Curry, The Ringer. It just dropped yesterday. It was
an awesome piece.
Yeah, it was about Seth basically being like a super role player, being like the exact type of guy because of the gravity that he gives you, and also just like this.
Yeah, he's like in the JJ role that was like he can Embiid and gets into these lockstep rhythms with a shooter.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. There was a piece in there about how when Morey was the GM of the Rockets, He wanted to trade for Seth, or he wanted to sign Seth. That was when Seth went to Dallas, and then, you know, he managed to trade for him when he went to the Sixers. All of which is to say that Daryl Morey is incredibly patient. Once he likes a player, I feel like he really likes him, and I think that once he's been in those trade rumors, like, you can count on Daryl taking his shot at trying to figure out if he could get them.
All right, so we spent the entire pod basically complaining about stuff. Should we end on like a positive note? Is there anything that you want to be like, I want more of this?
I want more Evan Mobley, Lauri Markkanen pick and rolls. I love it. It's honestly, I mean, I love watching that team, but Mobley's a great passer. And then you combine that with the fact that he can see over literally everyone, throw a pass over literally everyone. He plays with a bunch of guys who can catch the ball over literally anyone. They've kind of like, I feel like they can take vertical space, just kind of like a completely new limit. There was a play, I can't remember who they're playing, but yeah, Mobley and Markkanen ran like this pick and roll, and Markkanen just slipped it, and it was like, it was the easiest pass in the world to make. Like, it's just like, there's no, like, who's going to defend that? Who's going to defend you throwing like a 7-footer with his wingspan, throwing it up high to another 7-footer on a slip, especially like if you can see over the defense, slips are like, as far as passes go, like they're really hard to intercept from the top unless you're also like Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know? I love watching the Cavs. I love just the creative stuff that they're doing. More of that particular play and more of whatever, you know, whatever's in the bag for that team. Like, just throw it all out there. It's all working.
That's mine. I was gonna say Garland. Like, I just want, like, Darius Garland is like, I try to watch like Cleveland at least once a week, and watching him kind of just sort of like assume so much responsibility after Sexton and Rubio went down and essentially be their closer, their point guard, but then their set shooting guard when Rondo comes in. And it's so awesome to watch a guy take the leap. We've seen it with Ja this year to some extent, and obviously what he's done with Memphis and leading them into like top of the Western Conference contention. But Garland's awesome. Like, I would never really like clocked him coming into the league, or like thought that whole Garland Sexton thing was just going to be like 4 years and then they were going to be like, you know, role players throughout the NBA. It's so
all they
cool
get is
him.
A great nickname out of it.
I know, Sexland. We can wrap it up there. Thanks to Chris Sutton for producing us. We'll be back next week. We hope to. We got all this out of our system, so expect nothing but like optimism going forward from the Answer podcast.
Good vibes only.